Welcome back to Dunkata Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today we are halfway through A Dance with Dragons. Mm-hmm. So we stopped after a Daenerys chapter, and it's before a Reek chapter that's actually called Prince of Winterfell.
Yes.
So.
About halfway.
I am going to get us warmed up today, Dan.
Okay.
I'm going to take you to the worksite. Okay.
Ooh, let me put my hard hat on.
Yes. So the place I work at is currently often under construction, and it's like a startup phase of this facility.
Okay. Right? Luke's building a
data
center.
And so there's a lot of... yeah, that's right. I'm one of the bad ones, too. One of the Elon ones.
Yeah. I love how he says one of the bad ones. Great, Luke.
Right.
Love it.
It's in Memphis. No. it's a water treatment facility. Anyway.
Sure it is.
There's a lot of like different contractors there that are trying to get different like systems working, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of like troubleshooting and like tests you have to run. But some of the equipment, it's like big stuff, and some of the equipment like generates chemicals and things like that. So there's a lot of like safety issues.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there's a few people that are driving me crazy about this.
Ooh, work
goss. And I have to complain
about it. We're getting
work
goss.
And this is going to be a generalized like complaint about when everyone like I don't know how relatable this is going to be, but when like people just say that this is a safety concern and it just like overrides anything else. We're just worried about safety, and then everyone in the room has to be like, well, of course, yeah.
Well, yeah, we're all worried about safety.
Of course, yeah. Nobody wants anything to be unsafe. And then it just like shuts down conversation.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, yes, I get that. But like, we do have to move forward. So we have to like figure out how to make it safe. We can't just shut it down. And then, but the other thing, the more specific thing that drives me the most crazy is that I'm like an operator kind of person. So I'm often in there like doing the testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm like, but we need to do this thing, whatever, they'll always be like, They'll go on this spiel where they'll be like, I'm concerned about your safety.
Oh, my God.
I'm concerned about saving your life. And they'll talk about this for like a while. And it's like, yeah, man, I know what safety means. I always knew that that's what the concern was. You don't have to explain to me in a very patronizing way what that is. I'm trying to solve the problem.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
Luke, I actually love this because it is a broader issue, and it's what I would call this category of sort of like, they're like verbal. It's not passive aggressive, but it's just like these little verbal attacks people can use that are so hard to parry that you just like, it's frustrating to even encounter them. So this is something that happens in my world a lot as well. Often, if somebody wants, something will come up at a faculty meeting. Maybe somebody's trying to get a new class on the curriculum. And almost always, they're like, I'm just trying to think of what's best for the students, regardless of if it's a popular proposal or not. And it's such a, the problem with it is it's such a universal thing that everybody agrees with that somebody is trying to weaponize for their standpoint.
Yeah.
I guess, for the thing that they want to do. Like, I can't disagree with the thing you're saying. All I can say is, yes, I also want what's good for the students / my own safety / the safety of everyone else here, but we need to do something else. And so it feels like just a speed bump is what it feels like, honestly. It feels like a giant roadblock in the conversation that's like, look, we still need to get to our destination. You've just made me detour to address this thing unnecessarily.
Right. And you've made me kind of like, you've made me seem like the person that doesn't care about this.
Yes.
Whereas
yes.
I'm the person trying to solve the problem and you're trying to just shut down conversation.
Yep.
Because you have to. When someone says something like that, you have to be like, yes, I agree. and they want you to stop there. And you have to be able to be like, yes, I agree, but.
Yeah.
But then that but sounds bad because you can't be like, yes, I agree, we should care about safety or about the students, but XYZ.
This is the perfect instance where I wish I was, I wish being a cool book character was a real thing, because the cool book character thing to do would be like, you don't think I care about safety? Sorry, are you implying I don't care about safety? And just like directly ask them to like, to try and like explicitly say what they're implying with the statement. Just be like,
right.
Sorry, let's be more direct here. Do you think I don't care about my own safety? Or do you think I'm stupid? Which one of those two is it? Because it's just,
right.
And you can never say that. Like, you can never say that and have a productive work environment after the fact. But it is always what I want to say. It's always like, God, what you're saying is actually pretty rude to me right now. It just doesn't sound that way.
Right. It's very like condescending also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's condescending. It implies, like, it puts the implication again on you that you don't care about these things.
Right.
And it sucks. It sucks to talk to somebody when they bring up something like that.
So frustrating.
It feels like a cheat code. Maybe we just need to workshop the solution to this, Luke, because it does come up a lot. It comes up a lot in a lot of areas I'm finding. I'm going to have to think
about this. This kind of generalized thing, not just the safety thing, but like this.
The general rhetorical strategy of bringing up like a morally obvious take to support your point that isn't related to that morally obvious take.
I see.
Like
yeah.
Caring about safety, caring about the students. Like, these are things that we all already care about. You saying it is a rhetorical implication that I don't care about those things. So like,
yeah,
we all care about these things.
Right.
It's not fair. You don't get to claim that ground.
this is something that we need. This needs a solution. I don't know if we're going to get there right now.
I think we're going to have to stew on this for a little bit. I'll tell you what, Luke, I'm going to be stewing on this all week.
Because, okay, good. Because I need that.
Honestly, hearing you say this makes me realize that this will be something valuable in my life generally. Like, if I can crack this, it's not context specific. It is just like a generally effective rhetorical tool that I could come up
this
with.
This is so true. This is so true. Okay. We're going to come up to this. We're going to come up with a solution to this.
Listeners, if you have any ideas, if you have encountered this in another way that you find frustrating, and if you have a solution.
Give us other examples.
If you've got other examples, great. Hit us up with those. We'd love to commiserate with you about people weaponizing concern for others against you. but we'd also love to hear solutions if anybody has them. Oh, Luke, I'm so glad you brought this up. This is something that frustrates the hell out of me, and it happens with relative frequency. So thank you.
Okay, good. I'm glad we could commiserate on that. Okay, let's leave it there for now.
Yeah.
We're frustrated. We're ready to talk book.
Speaking of being frustrated, man, it sucks they took Reek's appendix out, huh? Like, they cut off a couple of his fingers and his toes, and then... It sounds like Ramsey took his appendix out too? Man, you don't do that to a guy.
What are you talking about?
Well, you know how Reek keeps like alluding to this other thing that Ramsey has taken from him?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I mean, he's still like walking and talking, so he's not dead for whatever Ramsey took from him. Man, that appendix.
So, it must be an organ. What's the term? Vestigial organ?
Is that the term? Yeah, gotta be something he doesn't need to live.
Tonsils also could be.
Well, damn. I feel like
they don't have any ice cream, so they can't.
Yeah, he couldn't do that. Exactly. He didn't have any ice cream, so it wouldn't have worked. But the appendix, you just don't take a man's appendix unless he really needs it out, you know?
Right. Which I don't think he did.
Didn't sound like it. Didn't sound like it was an elective or voluntary surgery.
Yeah.
Ah. Does this bastard, I'll say it, does this bastard have no qualms? Does he have no morals?
He has no line.
Does he have no
heart?
He'll
even take Reek's appendix. Yeah. which is clearly what that's alluding to.
I mean, I don't know what else it could be.
Right.
That's also why he can't get in the bath, you know, because he can't get his surgical wound wet.
Right.
Could get infected.
So true.
It actually, hold on real quick though. It is kind of amazing that Reek has not died from a horrible infection yet. No?
Yeah. I mean, he is like nursing wounds and is incredibly filthy.
Like rolling in dirt constantly, not eating very much at all.
Never bathing. He's not allowed to clean himself, essentially.
Yeah, this guy is... There's no antibiotics, by the way. We've already acknowledged that. People are dying of infection left and right. I guess he's got a prophecy looking out for him somewhere.
Dan, theory time.
Oh, Luke, we got a theory?
Okay, this is a fake theory. I'm going to be clear.
Luke, I want to be clear right now. They're all fake theories. We're going to peel aside the kayfabe for a minute. They're all fake theories.
Okay.
But go ahead.
I want to talk about Daenerys later.
Yeah.
But I have to bring up something now. She says that Targaryens are basically immune to sickness.
Oh, wait a minute, Luke.
So I think what you've stumbled upon is that Reek's
a Targaryen.
Because he's somehow not getting infected.
Not getting sick. Hold on, Luke. White hair.
Okay. Yes. Unrelated to his stress and other maladies.
What are you talking
about? It's actually he used to dye his hair, but he hasn't had the opportunity now, so that's why it's turned white.
What do you mean he used to? Reek's always had white hair.
Has he?
Yeah, Reek.
Okay. Yes, this is true. Okay. I see your point.
Not sure the eye situation, but we're working on that.
Right. So yeah, confirmed,
I think. And he seems to be a little crazy. That's like 4 points for him being a Targaryen.
Yeah. Okay, I'm feeling good about that one.
Yeah. Love that.
And we stumbled upon one there. Okay. I do want to stick with Ramsay, though.
Okay. All right.
I have, like, a couple notes that all kind of are converging into one.
And that note is?
The big idea here is that Roose Bolton, yes, his father,
yes,
is like seemingly pretty capable of like strategic thinking. Very capable of strategic thinking.
Yeah, seems political. Seems very good at politics and strategic thinking. Yeah.
And I feel like he's underestimating the blow that Ramsay's reputation is putting upon him.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
But I want to talk a couple strategic errors that Ramsay makes, because Ramsay, I think, does not think strategically.
No, absolutely not.
And one example that I want to talk about is pretty early on in this section, he sends Reek to Moat Cailin.
Yep.
And he gets the Ironborn there to surrender.
Yep.
Because he's like, yeah, if you surrender, you know, we'll be able to send you home or provide you safe passage as long as you surrender.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Which they do. And then Ramsay ends up killing them anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
In like horrific ways, it sounds like. Yeah.
In horrific ways. I get the impulse as for an evil person to
do
this.
Sorry, you get it? What?
Yeah. As an evil person, similar to Ramsay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But strategically.
Yeah. Not a good strategic move.
The next time you're sieging a castle or in some fight, they're not going to surrender.
And go be.
They're going to fight to the last man.
And go be a next time.
Yeah, because they're like, all right, if I surrender, you kill me. So like, fighting until I die is the best thing.
Right. I've seen Reek. I saw what you did to Reek. I'm not doing that.
Right.
That's not it. I think it's even more interesting how Roos is talking about Ramsay. So 100% agree with you. I don't think Ramsay would be a very stable like person in power. Like, I think, like,
for sure,
if Roose wasn't there, like, let's say Roose dies and Ramsay inherits his seat as like the warden of the North, that is not lasting long at all. Like, people are rebelling against him in a second. And I don't think he has any of the political know-how to figure it out. Like, he's got his little guys, his little goblins that are his buddies.
His freaks, yeah.
But his freaks, kind of honestly like the who is that guy, the goat guy who cut off Jaime Lannister's hand?
Yeah. Yeah, I forget his name too, but yeah.
But he also had his freaks, but it only worked out for him as long as he had a more powerful person looking out for him, right?
Right.
Like, they are only able to do this because they have cover of somebody who's actually good at strategy. He's also not good at fighting. Like, he's not like a renowned warrior or anything. He's just a little freak. It's not going to go good. But Roose is over here like, yeah, I could have more sons, but Ramsay's going to kill him. So it actually works out better this way.
yeah. This is where the, like, his... He's not seeing the problem here.
No, doesn't seem like it.
Where, like, everyone sees Ramsay doing the most heinous things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is like, all right, Roose thinks that this dude is going to be the next leader after Roose is gone. So, like, now I have to make sure that Roose is not in a position of power, because if he is, then that power goes to this guy, who is horrible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, what is Ramsay bringing to the table? You know what I mean? Like, what is he bringing?
Right.
He got lucky with Winterfell. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He got lucky there. Nowhere else has he had, like, an amazing strategic contribution.
Yeah.
He sent in Reek to get the Iron Men to surrender. So what?
Right. Everyone says that Moat Cailin can, like, you can take it from the north pretty easily. So, like, they kind of could have just gone and taken it, right?
Yeah, that's where they were coming from. Also, the garrison was dying. The garrison was, like, actively dying as he is trying to take Moat Cailin. It's not impressive.
Yeah. And just the reputational damage, though, also. This guy's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, granted, Luke, the reputational damage of a house that's sigil is a flayed man, probably not
right.
Hard to...
We gotta do something about these guys. No more Boltons. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, the North is just a different place, Luke.
Right.
I guess I actually...
No, that's bad.
This does lead me to another bigger point about the North that is starting to come up here. So the Northerners follow the old gods to a big degree, right?
Yeah.
There seems to be a fairly strong history of human sacrifice to the old gods in the North.
Yes.
I don't know if this is... I don't know if the North is actually cool.
Dan, it's sick, okay? It's awesome.
Well, I know we've been riding for the Northerners for a long time, but the story of, like, there was that story of the guy taking the dude's entrails and, like, spreading them all over the tree in the Godswood at White Harbor, or, like, I guess what used to be called Wolf's Den.
Yeah.
And, like, when... We'll talk about this, I'm sure, a little bit later. When Bran goes back in time, it sounds like there's other instances of human sacrifice in front of the trees. And, like, you could also argue that, like, Ned Stark seems to have continued a sort of tradition of human sacrifice with this whole beheading deal.
Right, because he has to be the one that beheads them, and he, like, does it there, typically, right?
I can't remember if he specifically does it at the tree, but it's, like... closely related to the tree. Like, the trees are important for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, cleans his sword at the tree after he does it. I don't know, guys. I think this might be bad.
Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm riding for the North always, but there's a lot of bad stuff in this book, and that one seems not too bad. Right?
Luke, there's another one that I can't remember if we get any more information about this in this book or not, but Bran is getting the power of the tree from the singers, right?
Yeah.
And they give him this bowl of mush that's shot through with red stuff in it.
Yeah.
And he's like,
he says he thinks it's sap, but unconfirmed.
Or blood. He also says it looks like sap or remarkably like blood. Question mark.
Yeah.
Then immediately after this, who's nowhere to be found? Oh, his two best friends who came up with him. Where did they go, buddy? Where's Jojen and Mira?
Okay.
They're feeling sad. They're wishing they could just go home, but they can't. Jojen seems to know something that's horrible. That's their fate. Did they end up in Bran's soup? I don't know if we learn more about this. I do not remember if this is confirmed or denied, but like, where did they go?
We've only had like one chapter with them missing, and them not being there isn't really a focus of that chapter, right?
That's true, but like, they're there before he eats the blood pudding. I'm calling it blood pudding, and
okay,
time seems to be weird where he's at.
Yeah,
he eats the blood pudding and then is like, their beds are cold, they're not there. He doesn't think more of it. So maybe it's a casual statement. Maybe it's casual, like, they are in a different part
exploring.
Of the cave. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just, I'm getting human sacrifice vibes and I'm not loving it, is all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I am getting those vibes and I am loving it. So, the other thing about this is, I don't know what it means, but this scene where he's going back in time and seeing the different scenes at Winterfell,
mm-hmm.
and the last one is the human sacrifice.
Yeah.
I think it's hinted here that whoever is getting sacrificed is named Brandon Stark.
Ooh, okay.
Because it goes like, most of that chapter is referring to Bran as Bran. And then at the end, it says, but like something along the lines of Brandon Stark could taste blood in his mouth or something.
Ooh, okay.
And it's weird to change to Brandon Stark to Bran. So that, I think that's a Brandon Stark that's getting sacrificed. I don't know what that means.
It also seems like a very long time ago that happened.
Right.
Interesting.
That's kind of all I have on that one. But since we're here, actually.
Yeah, let's stay here. We might as well.
We're kind of jumping around timeline-wise.
Yeah.
But I guess staying consistent with the areas. So they're in this place with the Children of the Forest. And there's a few Children of the Forest that are also seemingly green seers, because mm-hmm. they're like on these trees too,
mm-hmm.
hanging out.
Yeah.
But what I really want to talk about is, what do you mean? So there's this river underground,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes down to a sunless sea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Luke, it's called an
aquifer?
How
big is this place?
That's how an aquifer works, right?
It is not how an aquifer works.
It's just like that place in Elder Scrolls where you go down the little elevator and there's like a big, like Sophia River, I think is the place.
Yes, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, I think that's it.
But my point is, what's going on here? Can we explore a little more? This place seems so much more magical than it's getting used for.
We are getting a lot of magic here. But Bran's got a mission.
No, I agree with, like, Bran and this crew can't really do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what's going on?
You're saying we should get to go. Like, I get it that Bran has to sit in the chair, but that doesn't mean we have to stay in the chair. Like, we should get to go look.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
There's some crazy stuff.
Ah, there's probably a little creature down there with a ring that he's not supposed to have.
Right.
He might try and ask some riddles. That'd be my guess, if I were to guess.
No, that sounds right.
What's down there?
Yeah, there's a lot of passages. I don't know. There's some crazy magic and some crazy creatures down there.
We've been getting a lot more magical in this book.
We have. I agree.
The magic's coming back.
Yeah, especially like, I'm going to move us along.
Yeah, let's go.
Here. But Melisandre, we get a chapter with her perspective.
Uh-huh.
And I have a couple notes on this. One is that it's actually, I actually kind of appreciated getting her perspective where she doesn't seem totally confident all the time.
Yeah.
Because when we see her from a different character's perspective, she's like on it.
Yeah.
She's like so mysterious, but knows what's happening.
Yes. Yes.
She says the most crazy stuff, but then it like comes out true. And anyway, and she seems like super powerful and things like that, which she is, even from her perspective.
Yeah.
But it was nice because we get it and she's like rushing to try to figure out this vision because she's like, I gotta actually help John. And it was a different view of her than I think we're used to.
I agree. And it also, Luke, in this perspective, she kind of reveals how she thinks about power and why she always acts like she's got it put together, right? She talks about how John hasn't taken the King's Tower for himself, which makes him look weak, makes him look like he's not in authority. So it makes him a target. And so it like gives you a sense of like where her priorities are. Like she doesn't understand. She thinks it's a weakness of his to do this because she's like, no, you have to look like you're an authority to have power.
Yes.
And so, it makes sense that she's always like acting like she can constantly see the future. But at the
same time, kind of agree with her point, by the way.
I don't think I do, because I think that there's a lot more power in people like liking you and feeling like they know you. Rather than feeling like, and I think that's where a lot of John's power comes from, is like the brothers respect him and they feel like they know him. You know what I mean?
I think that's true. And I think, well, okay, so here's the thing, because I feel like John kind of mixes these two. Where I think he does have that respect and like brotherhood going on, mostly because he spent time with them as peers.
Yes, for sure.
But then now as he's like walking through, he specifically avoids doing that.
This is true. I think he's transitioning. I think this is a transitory period, because I mean, it started with him, you know, cutting that guy's head off, cutting Janna Slint's head off, I think.
Yeah.
Which is, that was like his first act, kind of, as the Lord Commander. That was him being like, no, I'm in charge.
His big one. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I do think that he is undergoing a transformation in that way.
Yeah.
So.
But back to your original point about the magic.
Yeah.
Or were you going to say something else?
No. I mean, magic's coming in big right now.
Yeah, Melisandre's talking about like all the spells she can do.
Yeah. She can do a spell.
How she's like so much more powerful here.
Like a disguising spell?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Where else did you use that?
We've kind of already known that she can do a lot of stuff, right? And I'm sure in a previous episode we were like, we got a Lord of Light's looking pretty strong here.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking top tier in the pantheon.
But she's like, I feel like this is one of the few times that we've seen her specifically be like, yeah, I can cast spells and sorceries.
I mean, no, that's not true. Because she killed Renly Baratheon.
Yeah.
She, like,
yeah,
birthed sure, a sure. demon that killed Renly Baratheon.
Right.
And Davos was like, whoa, she can do real magic, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we've seen her do a little bit, but it feels like that felt like a fluke, I guess. And now we can see her, like, casting minor illusion on Mance. And
yeah.
Luke, I do have another question for you, and that is, what'd she do to Davos? Because when she's talking about what gives things power to, like, conceal them or transform them, one of the things that she talks about is finger bones as being a component.
I did, yeah, she did say something about finger bones.
Now, there's a few options here for that. The first is that those finger bones gave her a connection to Davos, and she was able to, like, do something to him specifically. Mm-hmm. An alternative is that she was able to do, like, this concealing, this, like, minor illusion on somebody else to make people think they were Davos. Which, I have to ask the question, is this person who is at White Harbor actually Davos?
Well, so, okay, remember, because I think her point is that the bones or whatever that is connected to the person are useful to make the illusion work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But Davos lost his finger bones.
This is true.
So there could be someone...
Did she find them?
Walking around with those things.
Mm-hmm.
Those valuable finger bones.
Dangerous. Just dangerous, Davos.
It is weird that she specifically said finger bones. I mean, and immediately points to Davos.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. She's got him. Maybe she's just got him in her little pouch of secrets and she's holding on to him for a rainy day.
She's just like, these could come in handy at some point.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little insurance.
Yeah.
But yeah, magic's coming in big. The seven, by comparison, well, I think we may have made this point once before, so we don't need to harp on it. What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing for us, seven?
I think I said this last time. It's a what have you done for me lately kind of economy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got to be thinking Lord of Light, because, I mean, we as readers know that the old gods are have their own thing going on.
Yeah.
But no one else really does, right?
Yeah, it seems like no. Yeah. Lord of Light.
Yeah. What do you think about, since we're kind of there already, what do you think about John's whole predicament and strategy?
Which strategy?
So, like, he has a problem where he doesn't have enough men,
mm-hmm,
to hold the wall. And he knows a bunch of wildlings are trying to get past the wall.
Yeah.
And so he, winter's coming, famously.
Classic.
And like, they don't have enough resources. They have enough resources to feed them, but not enough for, like, everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's in this spot where he's trying to, like, kind of recruit the wildlings to help him man the wall,
mm-hmm,
but also not try to let wildlings get past the wall. It's kind of confusing where it seems like it's kind of like, do we sort of just ignore our duty to stop the wildlings from climbing the wall?
It feels like they should.
Yeah.
It feels like we're at the point where they know this. They know what's coming and it's not wildlings.
Right.
It feels like it's a time for you to say, hey, wildlings, come on. Come on, let's go. Like, we open the gates. You guys can come, but you have to help us at least a little bit before you go do whatever the fuck you want. Especially considering that, like, the rest of the realm seems to be completely ignoring the wall. Like, they're not sending any aid. They're not sending any people up there to help. If I'm a member of the Night's Watch up on the wall, I'm like, fuck you guys. Like, I don't care if they raid the entirety of Westeros. Like, let them go. Right. This is, we have bigger problems to worry about.
Right.
Y'all can deal with these raiders. Like, figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
There's like White Walkers coming that will destroy everyone. There's zombies coming. We need to fight the zombies.
Right. So this is my take that, like, you kind of let the wildlings, whatever they're going to do, let them do it.
Yeah.
But then my issue is, like, I don't know what to do about the White Walkers and stuff. Like you were like, okay, wildlings, you can come by, but you have to help us a little bit. But I don't really know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, step one, you got to get some more of that obsidian.
Yeah.
Got to find some more of that. Step two is don't let them in. You know?
So true.
Just tell them to stay over there.
Yeah.
Keep the gates closed. Right?
Right.
I mean, that's what the wall's for.
It's a tough one.
That's what the wall's
for. It's a tough one, though. Yeah.
Get a lot of firewood. Make some flame arrows.
Yeah. Make some flame arrows.
Seems like they're weak to
obsidian,
fire.
Obsidian, flame arrows.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe do what this one guy says and just seal up the wall. I don't know. I don't like that. I like going north. North's cool.
Yeah, going across the wall is really sick, so we can't seal it up.
This weirwood with like 9 trees?
Mm-hmm.
That's too cool.
Yeah, it's important. It's culturally important for them, so they can't. But yeah, you definitely let them. You let them come through, for sure.
Yeah.
What do we think about the flamingo fighters? The flamingo warriors?
What do you mean?
I'm going to take us across the narrow sea.
Okay. Yes.
And we get some descriptions about the various groups that are going to fight Meereen, that are going to go fight Daenerys.
Yeah.
And we get that description from Quentin Martell, the like Martell that's on the way. They've joined up with a sellsword company and they've sacked Astapor.
Yeah.
And one of the divisions is like this slave owner has bought up as many tall slaves as he could and dressed them in pink and put big beaks on their heads. They call them the herons. Like they sort of refer to them as herons, yeah. But these are flamingos, right?
I actually didn't realize that they were dressed in pink too.
Yeah, they are. Guy, okay. This is not intimidating.
I agree that it's not intimidating. I feel it's weird. Like, I get the thing about getting the biggest boys.
Yeah.
I think that could work.
Especially if you want to start a cool sport with balls and hoops.
Right. Exactly. I don't really get why he went for the heron/flamingo strategy, though. Because some of them are also, like, in stilts, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Eventually, he's trying to get rid of the stilts. He's like, if I get them big enough, I don't need the stilts anymore.
Which makes it seem like he has a specific height target in mind, by the way.
It does. Yeah. Uh-huh. Seems so dumb for a fighting person, though.
Yeah.
Those ankles are glass. Right?
I mean, yeah, I agree.
Like, they're going down.
You mean the stilts thing? Or just being this tall?
Being this tall. Like, being too tall. First off, instant target for arrows.
Right.
The easiest target. You're like, I don't know, just fire at the big tall guys. The ones whose heads are way above everyone else's, go for those.
Yeah, they're like magnets for arrows.
Mm. Magnets for arrows. If I'm on a horse, you're not outrunning me on a horse. I am running you down easily, and I'm going for the legs.
Yeah,
they're fragile, they're not gonna hold up.
I'm curious if he's only going for height or if they're also like super muscular and strong too. Because like I get the idea if they're like huge, like this is the mountain idea, right?
Sure.
Where he's huge, but he's also like strong enough that he can have a massive sword.
Yeah. I get the sense that if they refer to them as bird-like, they've probably got dainty little bones.
Right.
So my guess
they're
like, is...
They're following the Wimby model. Are you familiar?
Say more.
Famous San Antonio Spurs basketball player who's very tall but very skinny.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Now that you mention that, Luke, it's coming back to me. It's coming back to me.
A Kevin Durant, if you will.
Yeah, another basketball guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, the bird approach is weird to me.
It seems weird. It also seems like if I'm Daenerys and I hear about this, I feel less worried.
I agree. I initially thought that she was right about, like, she's like, yeah, we have the walls. We'll obviously stay in the castle. But Ser Barristan is like, no, we got to make an army and ride out and fight them.
Yeah.
And I actually agree based on this.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. I mean, Astapor seems to almost win.
Well, yeah. And then also, like, you're already struggling. You're already talking about how you have a hard time feeding everybody. You have enemies within. A siege is your nightmare right now.
Yep. 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 Ride out. Ride out and meet them.
And, Dan, same point that we made last time, you got dragons.
Yep.
Bust them out. Plenty
Use
of food.
Those bad boys.
Eat the bird, guys. They're big.
Okay. And plausible deniability.
Right. I thought they were birds.
I thought they were big birds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think this also solves their food problem because you just take all of the fighting people. Maybe you like arm a bunch of the slaves, right? You leave them back in Meereen. You're like, hey, I'm coming back, so don't fuck around. And then you go. And then you can take all the supplies of these various armies that you destroy as you basically you walk it back. You just walk it back to where you started in Astapor. You make your way that way and defeating these people as you go. And then you get to Astapor and you're like, okay, that didn't work. Let's try again. Let's try again with this place. Let's get this back up and running. And then you leave again.
Yeah.
The cycle repeats.
I mean, I will say these groups of the weird soldier, because there's several with their own gimmick.
Yeah, like right? The ones that are all chained together, just like stupid shit.
Right. Which I'm kind of pro, not this chain one specifically, but I'm kind of pro.
Like having a gimmick.
Every just like weird fail son gets like a few, like a little mini army that they can do weird stuff with.
Yeah. Yeah. Innovation. It's called innovation.
I like that. Right. But my point is, there's other groups. These are not the only people, right? So it's not quite as easy as we're making it seem. There's like genuine sellsword companies that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Granted, like the Unsullied are really good at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta make use of them.
Yeah. For sure.
And the dragons also.
We keep coming back to the dragons, Luke. Luke, who do you think has the worst plan right now? I'm going to give you some candidates, and I want you to tell me whose plan's the worst. Griff, Quentin, Jorah.
Ooh.
Now, obviously the things that connect all of these people is they're trying to get to Daenerys.
Right.
Yeah. Young Griff has made a pivot and is now
right, I was
going to
say, that side took a pivot.
But before the pivot happened, there was a plan to get to Daenerys. Who's got the worst one?
Well, okay, so hang on, because the Griff crew thought that Daenerys was coming to them.
Right, but they were also going to just grab the gold company and go to Daenerys.
Yeah, yeah. That's a bad plan because they don't have ships.
Okay, sure. I mean, Luke, listen, they're all bad plans. We don't need to specifically detail why each of these plans is so dumb. I mean, they are, for sure. Like, yeah. Also, why would Daenerys be like, oh, you're hot. I've got three dragons, but you're kind of a hottie. Let's do it. Let me marry you for some reason.
Right.
You don't have any.
I mean,
other,
okay, so this, yeah, this, you're kind of making Tyrion's point, which is like, why would she care about you?
Yeah, it's a good
point.
But
that was before they had the gold company, right?
Even with the gold company, I'm like, I could, like, a marriage to me is worth so much more than the gold company.
True. But I don't think she's thinking this way, because she's about to marry this marine guy.
Yeah. Which the marriage to the marine guy is peace, right?
Yeah.
Which is way more valuable than the gold company, right?
Right. If you're going to stay in, because she cares about like solidifying marine.
Which is foolish.
Which is foolish.
I mean, they're all fools, yes. But like the ones who are going,
everybody's plan is bad.
The ones who are going,
including
to see
Daenerys.
Her hand. Quentin's plan, I think, honestly, I think
Quentin's might be the worst.
Is the worst, yeah. Jorah's plan is just like kind of dumb, but feels like it could, like he could presumably make it to get to Daenerys with his plan. But Quentin's plan is like, what? How is any of this going to work, dude? You're going to like turn traitor at some point and then make it into a besieged city? And tell her that you're a Dorne person, and she's gonna be like, oh, hell yeah, let's ride.
right, yeah. Cause I'm more thinking of just like the getting her to marry him.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Cause that's what he's asking for.
Yeah.
Right. Or really, I mean, that's what his like father is asking for, or whatever their relation is. And it's like, The amount of people that are going to like support her side when she gets to Westeros,
yeah,
seems to not be affecting her decision making at all. Granted, Quentin doesn't know this because he's like never met her, but
which is another important part of this, yeah,
right.
For all of them except Jorah, like Griff, Quentin, they don't know anything about her at all,
right? Jorah's plan, at least, like. He's not really, he doesn't have lofty goals, at least.
Sure, but like, what is Tyrion, like, what benefit does bringing Tyrion have?
Yeah, this I don't really know.
Like.
I mean, I can see the value, but I don't see how like Jorah would be like, oh, she would love this guy.
She would love this little freak. Because it seems like before, you know, he's in the brothel, he sees Tyrion. And then he's like, oh, I can use this guy to get back into Daenerys' good graces. How? She doesn't care about this guy.
Right. She doesn't even really know him.
At all.
Yeah.
No. Not a good plan, Jorah. Not a good plan, Quentin. Not a good plan, Griff. None of these plans are good.
Well, it is interesting because like Griff isn't really his plan. It's like Illyrio and Varys' plan.
Yeah, that's fair. He seems to be okay going along with it, though. He seems to be like, oh, yeah, this is a good one.
I think the funny thing is that everyone except for Daenerys, I think, sees Westeros and is like, this place is ready to be taken. This place has nothing protecting it right now.
Yeah.
Just go. Because, like, honestly, her with the Golden Company, I think, wins.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But she's kind of trying to deal with this whole slavery situation.
Yeah, we have to talk about this. Actually, before we talk about that.
Yeah.
You mentioned the heron/flamingos.
Yep.
Can we talk about Dario?
God.
And what he's wearing.
His like absurd.
All the time.
Yeah, his absurd vibe. God, this is so frustrating. If I'm like an external observer, like if I'm just a citizen in Marine and I hear about like Daenerys being obsessed with this guy, I'm just like, that guy? Are you fucking kidding me?
I know.
That guy.
I know.
With the fucking, he's got the fucking like trucker hot babe mud flaps for sword handles.
Yeah.
Gross. That guy's gross.
Can I tell you what the description of his outfit when he comes on screen? He's wearing striped pants. I don't know what color, but striped pants.
Yep.
Tucked into, mind you, high purple boots.
Golly.
He's got a white silk shirt and a vest made of golden rings, I want to say.
Yep, that's, I remember that.
And then he has a like forked purple beard.
Yep.
Dyed purple.
Yep.
Big mustache that's gold.
Yep.
And then he has long curly hair that's alternating between purple and gold.
Yeah.
What? This is a clown outfit.
This is a literal clown. This is who gives you herpes, guys.
And then he has these like knives or swords or whatever with like intricately carved naked women as the hilts that he just rubs all the time in really provocative ways.
Yeah.
Get this boy out of here.
This is the 30-year-old who's hitting on 18-year-olds is who this is.
Yeah. This is mystery. In what's that thing called? What was it? It's pickup artist.
I don't
remember. Didn't he have like a show or something?
What are you talking about?
You don't know this? You haven't listened to podcasts or whatever about this time in history? This is the guy that like invented negging or something.
Oh God. Yeah, for sure. Especially God, this guy sucks so much. And the fact that Daenerys doesn't have anybody who's like, hey, are you sure with this guy? Because I don't know if he's great for you. It's not good.
There's other hot guys. There's other hot guys.
He's not hot. I'll say that. You described him well. This is literally a clown who is showed
right.
up.
There's also like a lot of, he talks in a very, she talks about how much like swagger he has.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that you're talking to that talks the same way as him.
Yes.
Who just gives you outlandish compliments all the time.
Yep. Find another one.
I guess he has been like pretty successful with all the missions.
He says. Still.
Yeah.
I get it. You know what? I get it. He's different. He's kind of a bad boy.
He is very different. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about, well, the slave economy.
Yes, please.
So, I think when this first happened, I forget if it was last book or the book before, when she comes to Slaver's Bay and does her big move where she gets the Unsullied for free, basically, and she like takes Astapor, I think.
Yes.
I forget. Did she like conquer Yunkai or did she just pass it by?
She passed it by.
Okay.
I think. Because she.
And I feel like when we were reading this, it was like, oh, hell yeah. Breaker of chains. Mm-hmm. This is sweet.
Yes.
Breaking the slave trade.
Yep.
Making moves. And I think we didn't quite, or at least I didn't really think about like how big the slave trade was to like.
Yes.
The entire world outside of Westeros. And then it's like, oh, this was a big move that you made kind of on a whim.
Luke, it feels to me like it's sort of a miracle that Westeros does not have slaves, considering how big the slave trade is in the rest of the world. Like,
yeah,
like integral to the rest of the world's economy.
Right.
What? I don't know, guys. I also think, Luke, it feels like Westeros would love slavery, and it's part of the reason why I feel like it's a mystery to me why they were able to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Just like how they love hierarchy in Westeros. Ah. I mean, good for them, honestly. Shouts out.
Good for them. They made it work. Right.
But like everywhere else, they're constantly like, hey, you know, if you do a good job, they'll give you just like a slave girl to rape all the time.
Yeah. They're saying the numbers and it's like 4 slaves per person.
Yeah.
So, okay, but the main point I want to get at is that I get that Danny is very young and very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this makes sense in that context.
Yes.
That she wants to free the slaves.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, obviously, to be clear.
Sure.
But considering the impact that that decision has, you got to plan ahead a little bit.
She can't do that, Luke. If she turns back, she'll be lost. I feel like she's the one who keeps saying that, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, like, only ahead. Only look ahead. And not that far ahead.
It's like, you're just not going to make it work. I'm sorry.
I mean, I feel like that's what we're kind of seeing, right? Is she is getting mired in this problem that is so big that there is no conceivable way out of it, right? Like,
right.
What is the end game here? Like, let's say you're able to somehow fend off these people. You're gonna starve because you don't have any food. You have no way of producing food. Nobody's gonna trade with you. Because it's not like they're all gonna renounce slavery if you beat them in this battle that's happening.
Right.
So there's not a lot that... There's not a lot of hope, I feel like, for Daenerys to actually have an impact here. I feel like she's just dealing with the problem right in front of her face.
Which we talked about last episode as well.
Yeah. I think it's been really interesting, actually, in this section to see how so many powerful people are trapped by their power. Like,
yeah.
The one that really stands out to me is Aisha, or Asha, the Kraken, the Greyjoy. I feel like she would have a great life just like dipping, just being like, hey, my hot boyfriend, come with me. Let's just take our ship and like chill. Let's just go
right
ship around and do
well,
stuff.
Well, they have one of the guys that likes her, but she doesn't like him back, suggests this, right?
Right.
It's like, let's just go be traders or pirates or something.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah. You should actually do that.
And like, you don't have to do it with that guy. You could do it with the hot guy that you love instead.
Right. I mean, both of them can come.
I guess. It's a little awkward.
Well, she already, it's not awkward because that guy's like, do you like me? And she's like, absolutely not. I'm not interested in you at all. So it's actually not awkward.
But that's what I mean. Like, leave him. You don't have to bring him. You could just be like, all right, now you go do your own thing and I'm going to go do my own thing. But she kind of talks herself out of it because she's like, I could never marry this guy because he's not of my status and like it just would never work. And I've got dreams for bigger things. And it's like, hey, maybe don't. have dreams for bigger things.
You have no way of accomplishing those.
Right. And you could actually have a great life that you would love if you just didn't care about it. And I think that's also true, you know, it's true of Jon Snow, where he's constantly like trying to wrestle with these big problems. Granted, he has a sense of like duty. It's true for Daenerys.
Yeah, he's a little bit different. Aisha is like, has this line where she's talking about how a couple years ago or whenever it was, she was at a point where she was just like having great sex with this dude and they were kind of just hanging out, and she was like, it's the happiest I've ever been or I will ever be.
Yeah.
It's like, you could do that, though.
Absolutely, you could do that. Just be happy. Yeah. You guys, just be happy. You don't have to chase the throne or whatever the fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Yeah, everyone, the theme of this is a lot of people are just like trapped in these weird scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quick note, Dan, you know who's not trapped anymore and who I'm very hyped for, who we talked about earlier, is Davos.
Davos. Yeah, this scene with Davos is hype.
Davos on a quest to go find Rickon. Rickon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so into it.
Over on Skagos.
I've never been more into anything.
Also, this amazing turn where the White Harbor guy is like, actually, I'm fucking sick and we're teaming up is so good.
Yeah. It rocks. Go get Rickon and Shaggy Dot. What have they been up to?
They've been having adventures, guy.
I bet they're awesome. Okay.
They're bringing an army.
All I want is right now a little time jump. Give me a time jump. I don't know, 10, 15 years. Rickon coming back. Shaggy Dog's massive.
Yep.
And
Rickon has a
Westerns.
Hunger
That's...
for human flesh.
Yes. Yeah. It's awesome.
And they conquer Westeros together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I want the next chapter to be. Just a quick time jump.
Yep.
Listen, guys, forget about all that stuff. We're going to Rickon now.
Yeah. Yep. That'd be pretty great. But we do love this Davos chapter. Luke, I do have a question for you, though, and I think it's something that I'm working on a theory, but I don't have one fully developed. And that it's related to Davos. So Davos gets put into jail.
Yeah.
And his jailers keep saying, we're going to take you down to the shittiest, worst dungeon prison cell in just a minute. Because this dungeon is empty. They're all available. So we're going to just throw you down in the worst possible pit. And obviously we find out a little bit later why they actually treat him pretty well. Why is White Harbor's dungeon empty? Like, why is it fully empty? Where
interesting
did Lord Manderly send all of his prisoners?
Okay.
Because they have to be, question. They have to be somewhere. There's no way. There is no way. I refuse to believe that White Harbor has solved the problem of prison.
Right. You're not talking about like a specific prisoner in mind. You're just saying like they should have people in these jails.
There's a few of them in
because
there.
Because they're a society. Yeah.
Right. And so then it begs the question, where did they put them? Because they had to send them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't send them to the wall. That's for sure.
Right. Right.
Where did he send them off to? Where? I feel like he's got a little play. This has to be a little play that he's working on.
Yeah. Do you have anything in mind, or are you floating the idea?
I'm floating the idea. I mean, places that have Poe are obviously the Vale, a place that is like potentially dangerous to White Harbor if they doesn't go their way. Potentially sending them to Casterly Rock, but it feels much harder to get them there. You know what I mean?
You mean as like an invading force?
Just like to cause trouble.
Okay, I see.
I'm guessing it's like no more than like 10 to 15 people, right?
Just loose criminals be like, go do your stuff over there.
Yeah, just get out of here. I don't care what you do over there. Just go do it over there.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out why his dungeon is empty. And I don't know. It's a mystery. It's a mystery to me.
I mean, I feel like there's an argument for the human sacrifice angle that we brought up earlier.
You mean that he ate them?
No, to the...
That is not a bad idea, Luke.
No, to the weirwoods.
I mean, Skagos is right there.
Right.
And, I mean, Luke, they don't follow the old gods in White Harbor.
Oh, okay.
Famously, they love the Seven there.
That's right. Lame.
But maybe he's trying to get in the mindset of the Skagos folks.
Either mindset of the Skagos folks, or I'm just going to continue with this of conversion to the old gods.
He's going an approach of like, might as well, you know?
Yeah.
He's trying to check all the boxes.
Right. He burned some of them, sacrificed some of them to the old gods, and sent some of them to Skagos.
Yeah.
He's just covering his bases, diversifying his portfolio.
He probably had a little nibble and then sent them off.
Some of these pies. Yeah.
He sent the most delicious ones to Skagos.
Right.
Yeah. That seems fair.
To pave the way for for Davos.
Well, actually, no. You'd want to send the least delicious ones to Skagos. Because if you send the most delicious, they eat them and they're like, oh, we need some more of these guys. As soon as these guys get here, we're chowing down.
You kind of want more medium, I guess.
No, you want the...
Because, like, you don't want to offend them, you know?
Well, that's if you're sending them as a gift to be eaten.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking of gift.
Okay. I was imagining just dropping them off to set the stage.
Okay.
And if you drop off all the gross ones, the ones that taste disgusting, then they're gonna try them and be like, oh, don't eat those ones.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, all good ideas. All good ideas, Luke.
Yeah, a lot of possibilities there.
Are we annoyed with Tyrion yet? Because I'm pretty annoyed with Tyrion at this point.
I mean, in general?
Tyrion?
I guess so, but what do you mean specifically?
Tyrion, we get it. You killed your dad. Can you give it a rest for, like, a day? All your jokes are now killed my dad jokes.
Yeah.
Every thought you have is like, ah, I remember what the crossbow felt like when I launched it into my dad's bowels. It was fucking crazy. We get it, guy. You've been talking about it for months now.
Yeah. He is. It is the kind of thing where it's like, I am tired of his quips and stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like, all right, let's just move this conversation along and be normal to some, as at least as much as we can.
Yeah. He can't do it though. Can't do it.
He's very dramatic. I feel like his drama level has increased exponentially.
Yeah. Absolutely. He lives for it now. It's all he lives for.
Yeah.
It's like, get a personality, dude. Number one, go to therapy. Number two, get a hobby or something. That's not drinking. Drinking doesn't count.
Right.
Also, Luke, the ship that they're taking?
Mm-hmm.
Perfumed, a seneschal?
Steward, I think, is the...
This is
perfumed seneschal is the person that Danny should be
watching out for.
Aware of? Are you saying that that's the same thing?
The boat... is like the translation is like fragrant administrator / advisor. And honestly, the fact that George doesn't like have Tyrion translate fragrant as perfumed is like, come on, guy.
Yeah.
Like George, are you doing this on purpose? Come on.
Right.
Are you trying to be coy with this, or are you trying to be like, hey guys, maybe this is the one?
Right, so because what's the, like, prophecy is not the right word, but warning, I guess. Is it just like, beware the perfumed seneschal?
Yeah,
I don't know how to say that last word, by the
way. I also don't know. It's beware the perfumed. And Dany is constantly asking the question. She's constantly like, are you the perfumed one? You smelling good? I don't think it's you. Maybe it's you.
Yeah.
This ship is literally called that.
Right.
Careful.
It's a good catch.
Careful.
Can I say something else that I'm just like tired of Tyrion?
Yeah.
With which I think is kind of the point, but this where do whores go thing? Like, dude, he just... Do you not understand? What, like, do you think he was being serious? I get that it... I get that it's kind of trying to say that he's pretty illogical at this... on this particular topic. But don't just ask people that.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, for sure. He's also drunk a lot of the time, so maybe that's playing into it.
Sure. Yeah.
Does it also feel like this was a long time ago, dude? When are you going to drop it?
Yeah.
Like, it felt like in the first like year of us knowing Tyrion, he mentioned this like once or twice.
Right.
And now it's like every day he's like, God, where do whores go? Remember that girl that I married? Where? I wonder where she's at these days.
Right. Remember that girl that I kind of ruined her life?
Yeah. I wonder where she's at.
I bet she would love to see me.
She wouldn't, Tyrion.
she would not, actually.
She would really not. Anyway. Yeah, Tyrion, get a new thing.
Yeah.
Maybe, here's hoping, okay, Luke, that when he gets to Meereen, this the defense of this city will be the problem he needs to snap him out of it.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
We'd love to see that.
Get a big chain across the bay.
First question I got for you, Danny. You got a big chain anywhere? No? That's okay. We can make one. Get them started.
That's number one. It always works. 100% success rate with a big chain.
Yep. It's going to be symbolic, too.
Right. We'll break it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Y'all are going to love it. It's cool. Works 100% of the time.
I'm excited for that.
I'm excited for that too, Luke. We're gonna have to just read and find out what happens when he gets there. Yep. If they start making a big chain, how how Danny's wedding goes. Ah, so exciting.
Mm-hmm. I know. Who's see the dress.
Yes, what's the dress look like? If slavery gets introduced into Westeros, or I guess reintroduced.
Right.
Hopefully all that and more in the next third, Luke. But regardless, we'll be bringing the hot takes.
And being dumb nerds.